Happy RSP Day, people, and you too, Matt Waldman. Welcome to the new year, and you know it's the new year because your rookie scouting portfolio is up and waiting and available for you if you're not already purchased. You need to head out to mattwaldman.com where you'll find a truly joyous pleasure trip through the sales process to land your rookie scouting portfolio. I know this, by the way. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good.
I know this, by the way, because I have become, much to my great glee, the unofficial guinea pig for testing the purchasing process, which means I get to go buy my rookie scouting portfolio. I wait until the day it goes. And so because I know this is coming, I get a little bit of early access, people. So yeah, I'll deal with that. And by the way, super smooth process this year, Matt. Very impressed.
Well, I appreciate that. I just got an email today. And if you're listening, Chris, hey, man, I feel you. Sometimes things are rough. And I know that some people don't like certain platforms. You know, some people aren't big fans of PayPal, and I understand. And we will be looking at another platform to add to the list of places that you can purchase through. But you know, it was both. I am pinning that email up on my wall because it was both the worst and the best email I've gotten in probably about 8 years. And he meant it with a lot of love. I know.
So he did.
He did. So I read it to Bob because I was like, whoa, man. Okay. So,
well, and also because I am like the guinea pig, I went through the whole process. By the way, go to mattwaldman.com, make your purchase. 1,153 pages of 2024 rookie goodness awaits you. The usual work, the expertise, the evaluation skills, the shown, all homework shown, as you've come to know and expect from the rookie scouting portfolio. So fantastic job once again, Matt, on time.
19 like, years. That's like the one little, thing I'm on time for, at least.
A little behind the, you know, let me pull the curtain back a little bit. So like for the last couple of weeks, I mean, we talk often. And so I check in and we, you know, hey, how's it going? Are you ahead? Yeah, I'm ahead. He has been like on point this entire time. That has not been the case every single year that I've known you.
No.
But in recent years, you've got it pretty well dialed in, and of course, the timely delivery everyone appreciates because everyone's waiting. According to my ex, my Twitter, it's quite the joyous occasion for all involved. So, happy day, happy RSP day out there. Just a second about Twitter. Hey, people, I get it, man. People say things to you on Twitter. People say things on the X. Somebody calling you something on Twitter, I mean, like, you don't have to pay attention. Well, somebody saying you're something, it's like somebody calling you peanut butter make you a delightfully tasty treat when paired with jellies and jams between two slices of bread? No. Nothing they say makes you anything. One nameless, faceless, to you otherwise meaningless voice means nothing. So everyone hey, digest that a little bit.
And I'll just say this. I don't know. I'm appreciative of what I'm getting on Twitter. I will say I am very appreciative of that, and I'm most appreciative of you guys who have been subscribing for years and years. You know, I would like to thank Mike McGregor, especially. A lot of people I'd like to thank, but like right off the bat, I'm not gonna make this an Oscar speech, okay? But I'll just say real quickly that, you know, I have a team of seven editors: Tom, Chris, Lisa, Joe, John, and Al, and Aaron. You know, you guys have done incredible work for me over the years. Steve Volk, who helped me put a lot of that together and suggested it. You know, really appreciate what you've done there. And Mike McGregor. I mean, listen, I got started in this industry because of Mike McGregor. Mike McGregor, when I didn't have a pot to piss in, and I literally barely had that, at a time, bought a laptop for me when I couldn't afford one when mine died, so I could continue writing at the site, and he funded me to write at that site. So you know, Mike's known me when I was cooking on one burner, and that is not a literal thing, you know. So I have much appreciation for Mike McGregor, draftbuddy.com. You can find him at FF Today still. You know, and he's a great guy in this industry. And of course, you know, it's nice to have people that I get to do this work with, like Bob Harris, and getting to, you know, do all the work that I did on the show with him, and the shows that he's invited me on, and those magazines in the background. The first time I got a chance to do one of those magazines was one of the big thrills of my career, because I had followed Bob for years, you know, and he was an inspiration to me. So it's always a thrill to get the chance to work with this curmudgeon over here.
I'm going to start calling you things on Twitter now.
Okay.
By the way, I mean,
so we're done.
Speaking of the ex-Twitter box, you know, a lot of my information on the rookies, you know, prior to getting the rookie scouting portfolio, I see the backs and forths and the to and fro and the arguments about various prospects, and I see the names rise up. And one of the names that's risen up to me or going higher on my radar, seems to be drawing a lot of buzz, is a USC player. Not that one. The other one. Marshawn Lloyd. A boom or bust prospect? How do you see him? How do you feel him?
Yeah, I think he's a boom bust prospect. You know, you could say both in that regard, because, listen, he's a short back with the size of a feature back. When I see him, I think about D'Angelo Williams. The problem is that when I see him, I miss D'Angelo Williams instead of look forward to seeing the next D'Angelo Williams. Now, that could possibly be the case for Lloyd at some point, because he has some ability to understand when to bounce certain runs, but it's inconsistent based on the type of run blocking or run blocking scheme that he's working behind. So he's got to become a little bit more mature with decision making, which is something that a lot of young backs have to do. But my biggest concern for him, and it's just one thing he has to address, and it's probably the one thing about my evaluation system with running backs that I still feel like I've got to figure out a way to address this and do a little bit more analysis, and I may not come up with a good answer for it, and that's ball security. Because, you know, do backs get better with a history of fumbling? Because Marshawn Lloyd's fumble rate is awful. I mean, like, it is free agent tier level, which dropped his eval from being, you know, really, if it was really good, he might have been running back two in this class. The fact that it isn't that good put him outside my top 10. Now, score-wise, he's still a guy that I think can give you starter execution in a role in the offense based on whatever role they give him that's confined to what he does well. But the problem is if he has a spate of fumbles and it doesn't work out, is it a Stephon Ridley type of situation where his career's gone? Or is it a Sony Michel type of situation where Michel had just as bad of a rate and he got a lot better and his problems wasn't fumbling, it was being able to stay healthy. So if Lloyd can go the Michel track, he's worth the hype.
What about like what an example of like Tiki Barber? I mean, I remember where he got like coached the fuck up. Thank you, Tom Coughlin. I mean, like, you know, really, you could see him, you know, where he reached that point where, you know, the 3 points of control. And I mean, just like he was doing it right. I mean, I think that's something to be coached. Hopefully, as a Quentin Johnson investor, I'm hoping something can be done about his bad habits as well, since he'll have a prominent role in Los Angeles. Different problem, but similar. So Marshawn Lloyd. All right, let's move on. There's another highly popular running back. I think Michigan's Blake Corum. 3,500 yards rushing in college, quite a body of work to fall back on. I think a lot of people would love to see him go to Los Angeles. My Gus Edwards shares would not like that as much, but I think they can peacefully coexist. How do you feel? Is Blake Corum the safest product right now, prospect, field or bucket?
He's the safest running back prospect available, for sure. I think he'll probably be a lot of people's number one running back on the board right now. He's my number two, and that's still really strong. I think he's close to being an instant starter in terms of ability when you grade across the entire positional spectrum. But he's high enough as what I call a rotational starter that a couple minor improvements here or there, and he's ready to start immediately, and that can happen during camp. You know, the big question about him is, you know, he's 5'8", 205. Does that mean that he's stuck in Kyren Williams, Devin Singletary land in terms of, you know, the physical dimensions, just a faster version of both those guys, a quicker version maybe of both those guys to some extent? That's possible. I still think he's probably a better runner than both in terms of what his potential offers. At the same time, there was a back who came out of Rice many years ago who was about 5'8", 205. and looked kind of like he didn't have the great explosion. The next year, he came in about 15 pounds heavier, and Ray Rice became a Pro Bowl back until, you know, his off-field issues with his with domestic violence that basically cost him his career. So, you know, Blake Corum has that kind of potential to be a Ray Rice-like talent. And at the lowest, though, you know, if your worst-case scenario is you're getting a Singletary Kyren Williams type who can come into an NFL team and be the starter and perform well behind a, you know, a good team around him, then I'd say that that makes him pretty safe. That's a pretty high floor.
Yeah, I think we're like, what's a good landing spot? Just, you know, like what kind of scheme? Give me a range of teams that you'd like to see him go to.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I know you'd hate it with Gus Edwards, but the Chargers is a nice fit because of the coach. That's obvious, right? You know, so that's nice. But I also think, you know, pairing him, putting him in a team that really he's, his quickness makes him worthwhile, that you could put him in a zone scheme where they do a lot of read option with a quarterback like, say, Lamar Jackson or Jalen Hurts. You know, you could see where that kind of thing would work out fine. So he could even function with, say, you know, if they were looking at, Carolina was looking at a back in the second or third round, if they have a pick, I haven't looked, but they might see that as him as the heir apparent that they could phase in with Bryce Young, and that could work. You could put him in a gap scheme, and I think his quickness to get into the secondary is good. So if you put him in Mike McDaniel's offense, even though he's not super fast, and people would look at Trey Benson as probably a better fit for Raheem Mostert, you could still see, yeah, you could still see Blake Corum do well in a system like that, or of course the Vikings with, you know, they do some spread, but they also have done some multiple tight ends, or, you know, team like Cleveland does multiple tight ends. Those are teams that I think Corum could fit in well with as well. So he's probably the reason why he's safe is he's probably also one of the most versatile backs in terms of blocking scheme to work with.
Ah, that works well. All right. So, and by the way, Mostert got a new deal. It got extended this weekend. So, yeah. Looks like I've seen Devon Achane going like in the second round, almost exclusively in best balls, and Mostert going closer to the double digit rounds. Got a lot of Mostert on those early best balls, folks. Who is the hardest player for you to evaluate this year?
Another Michigan player, and that was JJ McCarthy. I had a real tough time with JJ McCarthy because
everybody's favorite.
Yeah, right. He's just, it's the decision making. There are times when you watch him and you see some high end decisions where the delay between seeing what's open and getting the ball there and putting it where it needs to be is just perfectly timed. And that's what you want. But then there, and you know, I've seen people say on StatWise that he's been very good on third and fourth down, and that's great, but he hasn't been very good in the black zone and the green zone, which are basically, you know, if you're not familiar with those zones, the back zone is deep in your own red area, and the green zone is inside the five of your opponent's area, and those are the areas where coaches spend an inordinate amount of time working on plays, because they know that management decision making is key and execution has to be on point because there's such a low margin of error. And McCarthy's biggest errors seem to come in those ranges where he's not throwing the ball away, where he's trying to taking too much time, he's trying to force balls in that he shouldn't, and there's just plays that he doesn't see the field as well in, whereas like you've got like both highs and lows with him, whereas like with Zach Wilson there were a lot of lows with his game. Like you would look in Mitchell Trubisky, you'd look at situational football and he invariably had lows and that was it, and the highs were like easier throws, highlight reel type of stuff that you see on YouTube but aren't really like the more complex things you're gonna expect in the NFL. You know, people, this is the big thing that I think people could do a better job with, is that if you're watching YouTube highlight videos, that a lot of the throws or that you're going to see analysts show on Twitter or YouTube and they say, man, that was a great throw, understand that a lot of those great plays are really just like what you should have done and expected to do as pedestrian type of work in the NFL. Whereas the really great things that are truly that way, a lot of these guys struggle with. And so McCarthy is one of those players that when I look at his game, there's a lot of things that he has to show he can do better. And one of the things he has to prove is, can he throw deep with accuracy? Can he get beyond the intermediate range with accuracy? And is it a function of the Harbaugh offense and the wide receivers he had, or is it him?
So how much of this was just like, I had a number in my fantasy notebook this week. You can find that on Football Guys. Michigan's run percentage, got this from Jason Wood, our buddy Football Guys. In Michigan on this team was 40.4%. It was the 117th lowest pass rate out of 133 qualifying teams. Is that part of it is just a lack of evidence, right? I mean, is that part of what makes them hard to evaluate, or was there plenty of work for you to sample from?
I would say from the deeper ranges of the field, the sample was lower than I would have liked in terms of, but still, it wasn't just that the sample was low. It was just that he wasn't that accurate when he did.
It's interesting because, again, you know, following along on X, you see these things. And I mean, like all this is tied to me completely. You know, he was very low on my radar. And, you know, I'm pretty casual when it comes to draft. People, I'm watching the NFL during the weeks of the NFL season. So I rely on people like Matt and others out there to get me up to speed. But I start the process, and some of that you're paying attention. And you hear Jim Harbaugh say, he's the best quarterback in the draft. Well, then everyone started talking about him. It seemed like this drumbeat began building, and now he is like kind of viewed way up there. I think Bo Nix has joined that category as well as a guy who, you know, recently has risen up in terms of the conversation. So what makes him so appealing to NFL teams, the Oregon quarterback?
That I'm kind of glad to see a bit. But the big thing with Nix is that he is someone that people thought was a college system quarterback at Oregon, and that he found new life there after struggling at Auburn. But both systems really featured their share of bubble screens and RPOs and process, you know. And when you look at his evaluation, you really look at him deeply. You see that he's more than a product of his scheme. He doesn't have a cannon of an arm, and that was probably what kept him down too. But he's accurate. He has good technical prowess with his throwing. He manipulates coverage pretty well. His pocket management is pretty strong. He's a good decision maker, and he has athletic ability to develop into a starter. I mean, I think he reads the field better than he's credited, and he accounts for leverage well with defenders and target decisions. So he's also willing to make those plays in the tight windows. And Auburn, you know, Oregon wasn't the only place where he did this. Auburn, he did this, but his receivers offered him fewer favors with their execution. So, you know, I think that he's not, you know, his upside is probably more Matt Ryan-esque, where the arm isn't fantastic. You know, Ryan was like, anything over 45 yards was a bit of a, you know, a little bit of a roulette wheel in terms of pinpoint accuracy. But between 35 and 45 yards, he could probably get you, you know, access the receivers you need to, and you could see how productive he was in the prime of his career. So I think Nix has a chance to reach that Ryan upside if he finds the right system. If not, and the bottom falls out in his game, you're looking at probably Davis Mills, you know, and which means it could go either way. So yeah, it could go either way. Aaron Mitchell Trubisky might be the low end of that, but Mitchell had a better arm. But he's safe. He's safer as a quarterback prospect than some of the guys who are ranked below him who might have a higher ceiling. But the ability to access that ceiling in today's NFL is a big question mark, because the NFL has a big role in whether or not these guys have the surrounding talent or give them the patience to get them, let them develop, and that patience is really missing.
All right, if we're talking about ceilings, we should discuss Brock Bowers. Mike Ditka's 1961 season, still the best ever for a rookie tight end, 1,076 receiving yards. Kyle Pitts, came close, 10-26 there. Sam LaPorta, you know, made a run as well. Bowers, is he going to break? Feeling or fucking him breaking Dick as rookie production mark?
I'm feeling the possibility, and I'm feeling it until we see the landing spot. You know, I would say, you know, if you like gamble, take the gamble pre-draft on him for that. If you're in a 1.5 PPR league, he should probably be one of your top three picks, if not the top pick, in a 1.5 PPR, because he gets it done in a number of ways. The ability to run after the catch and re-accelerate to beat cornerbacks and you know, who are on the same side of the field as him is special. He is an efficient runner after the catch, but also dynamic. You can use him in the screen game, and he sets up blocks really well. You can get him running across the field and catch the ball, and he's going to make David Njoku look like a lumbering, like, guy with cement in his shoes, you know?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I just, like, 2 minutes ago picked David Njoku in a best ball draft. I thank you for that.
You're
and
welcome.
I didn't feel good about it already because of the numbers with Watson versus numbers with Flacco. You know.
No, it's, I mean, he should be, Njoku should be good. I just think it's an extreme compliment to Bowers that he makes a good athlete like Njoku look that way. And, you know, the only real issue with Brock Bowers is one specific, in terms of as a receiver, is one specific type of attack that he has to use in contested scenarios where he tends to clap attack the football, and he'll get better at it. And if he doesn't, it's like, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be like the Cortland Sutton, where it's like a good fantasy player like Sutton, but still has issues where you're like, yep, he's going to drop one or two in every game, you know, or it feels that way. I think Bowers will probably get through that. He has a chance to be a top five tight end this year, with the right landing spot, and a chance to really be what Vernon Davis and Aaron Hernandez had in terms of talent. I think he's that kind of talent, and that's a pretty strong statement with those two guys.
Okay, my ex-Twitter rant earlier in this program may or may not have had something to do with Caleb Williams. So let's keep this on the football aspects of the whole proceedings. Can the Bears screw up Caleb Williams? We're all making the assumption, as well we should, he's going to be the first pick overall. Chicago has made some moves, adding Keenan Allen. I think the overlooked Gerald Everett. Okay, probably not that overlooked. There, I got called him out. But I mean, it feels like they're doing things. They brought in Shane Waldron as offensive coordinator, moved on from Luke Getsy. Are they setting him up for success than they did with Justin Fields?
I think they're learning somewhat from their lessons, so that's good. But the proof will be on the field and how they implement things on the field in terms of protections they use, whether or not they're willing to take him out of games when he starts to have some issues, if he does. And just overall, maybe bringing him along a little bit slower and being prudent with the type of you know, environment that they give him and the timeline. And yes, I think they could screw this up, but I think that it's most likely. It's true. I mean, just look at all these quarterbacks. It's true. And I hate it, that's the case. But I think that of all the quarterbacks, and you know, I've been saying this probably since January, if not earlier, of all the quarterbacks that could probably withstand the onslaught of how the NFL just inserts guys in and tries to flash, you know, sear their quarterback into a delicious, juicy tasting product. I think Caleb Williams can handle it, but you know, at the same time, he might be the only one in this class that I feel really confident that even a bad team with a history of this kind of behavior with quarterbacks might not be able to screw him up. But I'm saying might, which means there's still enough possibility to have some concerns.
That's what we like to hear. Ricky Pearsall versus Ladd McConkey, the Bowers teammate. Like, you know, the surface view of these guys is they're kind of similar, right? I mean, they're the same guy. Are they the same guy? Who are you feeling more?
I'm a Georgia graduate. Okay. But I'm going to do this today.
The Gators.
I'm going to feel for the Gator because they're very close. They're back-to-back, I think, on my board. But Pearsall, I think, is the better all-around player right now, meaning that I think he's better. He's more proven as a player against press coverage, using his hands and his feet to be able to get away. I think he has more experience in games that shows up well on the outside in contested scenarios, winning the ball in a way that allows you to say he could play inside or outside for you and do well. Whereas with Ladd McConkey, there's promise and likelihood that he can do both, but you don't see him use his hands very much to release against press coverage right now. It doesn't mean he can't do it. It just means that when I'm doing my process to evaluate, if I don't see it, I can't say he will, you know? And if I see it in practice, I'm going, well, that's great. I see a lot of good things that happen in practice, but I don't see him translate into games for players. So, you know, with McConkey, still a guy that I think will start immediately and be a very good player. And depending on where he lands and if he's used a lot in the slot, he can wind up being the best, most productive receiver in this class year one. But I think that if all things were equal, you know, I think Pearsall's just slightly better because of the fact that he offers more proof of concept on the outside.
Both look like solid pro players.
Yeah. Good pro players.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it did. That's my general impression as I start to gain an understanding of these peoples. Ray Davis, let's get into some of the guys that are maybe not in the top, the Kentucky Wildcat running back, Ray Davis. All 5'8", 211 pounds of him.
He runs like he's 225. And that's what's fun about him is that he'll run over you, run through you. He can run. He's got some nice footwork to run around you. And he's someone that you can still use a little bit as a dump-off receiver and get a lot of that out of him, too. He makes mincemeat out of secondary defenders in that respect. He kind of makes you think of an undersized Travis Henry. In that respect, if you go back as far as Bob and I do, where you get that type of a player who is physical for his size, his pass pro needs a lot of work right now, and that may be the thing that keeps him
right
off of out of a rotation or out of a major role in a rotation right now. So that's kind of the big thing, and he's a little better with some schemes than others, but he's a fun guy. Like, with all these wide receivers and some good tight ends and intriguing quarterbacks, if you're looking in the fourth or fifth round and he's still sitting there, that might be one of the guys you want to target if you're looking to add a running back to your stable and just hope that you hit on a low investment with a bigger reward.
I know many times when the analysts have the models and they plug the running backs into the models and those running backs are less than 200 pounds, the model chews them up and spits them out undigested. Bo Nix teammate, Bucky Irving, 192 pounds, fits that mold. Is he a situational type player for you, or can he be more?
I think he's just a situational player, and I think he's a bit of a maybe getting a little bit overrated a little bit in our draft media as a situational player, depending on which end you go to. He's, you know, I heard Daniel Jeremiah recently describe him or compare him to Devin Singletary, and I think that in order for that to happen, he's going to have to become a better pass catcher and a better route runner to do that, even in the underneath areas. I'm not looking for him to do Austin Eckler routes. I'm just looking for like Devin Singletary routes, and some of the things he does with his hands position, the lack of snap he gets and the lack of position he gets to win underneath sometimes as a receiver needs to be fixed. He has good movement skills. He's quicker than fast, but he doesn't have that Devin Singletary pop as a runner in terms of power for his size. It's okay for his size, but it's got to be really good for his size to be compared to Singletary, at least from my opinion. So I see him as more of his ceiling is probably more of a contributor in a committee. And right now, I'd see him more as a contributor in a three-headed backfield where he's not getting he's the third wheel more than he is the guy who's actually out on the date.
sad moment for him. I throw out that 200 number because my Jahmyr Gibbs success last year. I'm keeping closer eye. I know he was 199 pounds. It was a 1 pound off thing. So I just think it's interesting how people really get dismissive of these sub 200 pound backs, and I get it. I know how the history works, but I just find it interesting that we're not looking a little deeper. Matt obviously does. There's another player. Memphis seems like it's like spitting out running backs on a pretty regular basis. They have one now named Blake Watson. Is he underrated?
Oh, he is, absolutely. Not, I don't think, in draft analyst circles, but he certainly is.
He's not 200 pounds, Matt.
Uh-oh. He also, I think, ran a 4.39 at his pro day, which was nice. There we go. I don't know.
That's the number I look at.
but,
my model.
Right. See, there you go. No. But he's physical for his size. He runs with good pad level and breaks tackles. He is excellent in the open field in terms of movement, quickness, and speed. Probably the best pass catcher in this draft. Not the best route runner, though his route running could get better, and it's good enough in the underneath range where, like, if you're looking for what people are saying Bucky Irving should be, Blake Watson already is and has a chance to be then some on the board in terms of what he has available to his skills. Very good pass protector already. So good all-around back. He reminds me a lot of Gio Bernard. And if Gio Bernard came along probably eight years later than he did, he'd probably be what we saw from Austin Ekeler. I think Gio Bernard was that good of a prospect. He just didn't come around at the right time, just a little bit ahead of his time. I think Blake Watson might be right on time.
All right, fair enough. So, again, I keep feeling like some of these players seem extremely polarizing, maybe just because of the conversations on X, but Michael Penix Jr. fits that mold of, people either love him or hate him. I know you're a little more on the love end. Tell me more.
Yeah, I mean, he is definitely, I would say, like a lot is probably where I'd most say he is. He's someone that I think I wouldn't want him starting this year. But if he could get, or at least for half the year, if he could get a half a year or three quarters of the year on the bench and then put into a lineup, I think he'd wind up being one of the best quarterbacks in this class. The thing about him is that, he had two ACL tears in the same knee. He had a pair of shoulder injuries. One was to his throwing shoulder. That's going to scare teams off him. I don't think he's going to get the Carson Strong treatment. He certainly had the impressive buzz at the NFL Combine, so people like that, are thinking that maybe that would be helpful to him. But really, when you examine his game, he is a great vertical sideline thrower. He's the maybe the best in this class and in the past couple of classes at being able to put the ball where the receiver needs it in tight coverage on those throws. I see a lot of criticism about his lack of comfort with pressure, but I don't really get that. I thought he was efficient in terms of moving away from pressure in the pocket. He didn't, he would sidestep or climb. He'd reset his feet, find the open man in the middle of the field. And he wasn't a player that drifted too much into pressure. And I thought he made, he made a lot of good throws in the middle of the field that people kind of overlook. He's a good reader of leverage. He's a good decision maker. And then a lot of the stuff that I'm hearing about him sound more from the rumor mill than from what I've seen on tape. So for me, I think he's one of the two best quarterbacks in this class. But like I said, Caleb Williams is the one that is most likely immune to the NFL's bullshit way of, putting guys in and saying, here, sink or swim, John Wayne, right, school of swimming. Penix, I think, if you at least give him one floaty while they throw him into the river, he might be okay.
You hear of some of these teams that have a lot of draft capital that maybe haven't needed quarterback, or have high draft capital, maybe moving down, acquiring more draft capital. A team that's doing that seems like Penix would be the ideal target. They still need the quarterback, going to get him later. They want to build. They need more than just one piece to get it done. looking at you, New England. I don't think that, you know, not saying that I have any information that they're going to do this, but there seem like teams that have, you know, plenty of, you know, have that high powered draft capital, but have more than more needs than just quarterback, but also
there's
need a quarterback.
There's an angel just peeking over your right shoulder in purple who would love some Michael Penix. And so would his teammate, Jordan Addison. That, to me, is the spot, if you ask me. But I don't think Vikings fans agree, and the Vikings may not do it.
All right, so feeling Michael Penix Jr. is one, Matt Waldman. So Tip Ryman is a name I was not entirely familiar with. I watched some highlight film of him before we did this. He's 6'5", 270-plus pounds was what I knew about him. I watched the highlights. He moves like slightly better than someone 6'5", 271 pounds. Does he have starter ceiling in the Illinois tight end?
He does. Now, does that mean fantasy starter ceiling? Nah. That's, he's got to improve his route running a little bit more for that to happen. If he can become as good of a route runner as he is a blocker, he has starter fantasy upside for sure, because he's a terrific athlete and he blocks well and his hands are pretty good too. So I mean, he's not far away, even if he looks far away on the rankings. The score is pretty good.
Interesting. Another tight end then, Ohio State, Cade Stover, not as big, kind of more Bauer size, 6'4", 247 pounds. Feel him or fuck him.
He could start right now, I think. Ooh. For a lot of teams. Ooh. And he could be as long as he's a move tight end, kind of in that same right. Laporta-esque type of role. He's not as good of a route runner as Laporta was. Laporta looked like a wide receiver doing it. Stover looks more like a really good linebacker who's figured out how to become a tight end running routes right now. And that's exactly what he was. Where he's strongest is catching the ball. Stover looks like he's been playing tight end for about 15 years, the way he catches a football, and that's an impressive feat. He's textbook in how he attacks the ball in a variety of angles against tight coverage or in the open area or different adjustments he has to make. And he's a bruiser who's nimble in the open field. He has that feel of an old school defender who's looking to hit you, but he also knows when to get away from you, and he's just efficient enough to be able to do it. So I think that if he gets a good landing spot, he's going to be a sleeper, and even in redraft formats at the end of redrafts.
I'll not give anything away, but I have glanced at the tight end rankings in the rookie scouting portfolio, and the rhetoric matches the placement. I will just say that and let you read for yourselves, good listener. Kyrie Robinson, is he a better Bucky Irving?
I think he might be. Like, upside-wise, it could be, because I think he's a lot faster. I think he has what we haven't seen from his is receiving. If he can prove that he's a solid to good receiver, then the answer is yes. But because I really didn't get to see him do enough different things in San Jose State's offense, he couldn't earn a higher grade. If he did, he already would have been a higher grade than Bucky Irving. As it is, I think he was just below Bucky Irving on my board. But a compelling runner in that Tariq Cohen kind of sense, but with more discipline on how to attack the line of scrimmage than Cohen ever showed.
Interesting. All right, then. So I'm going to cut us off here. We could go on all day, but people need to go out and read the rookie scouting portfolio. And by people, I mean me, Bob Harris, because I bought that from you last night, Matt Waldman. It's a joyous read. Tell everybody what the ordering is, where to go, what to do. Give them the full measure here.
Yeah, you can go to mattwaldman.com. You go there, you basically click purchase,
it works.
And it does work. You just enter in you're a new buyer, you're going to enter in your name and your email, and you're going to pay through PayPal. And, I may have another payment method at some point down the line, but it probably won't be this year. I've been doing it for a lot of years. You go through PayPal, they'll take you back to the site, and then there's a button that you click on, the green menu up at the top that says download, and you can download the RSP from there. You click that link and it literally uploads it onto your browser if you have Chrome, or downloads it wherever you have else on your other browsers, and you open it up on PDF format. And the only wonky thing I would say is, when you open it up on PDF format,
give it a minute.
Give it a minute, because it's a Godzilla-sized document, and you got to let Godzilla rise out of the ocean, and then once the little you know, electricity goes down at scale a little bit, and the processor's working, you can click on the bookmarks, and you're not going to have many delays unless you have an old ass computer. And
works great.
It works great. So that's how you can get it, mattwaldman.com. And again, you know, up to $5,000 goes to darknesstolight.org. Darkness to Light, I've been giving to since I think 2011.
What's the grand total? How much have you given them?
I think over $65,000 at this point. And they're a great organization. You can find out about them at d2l.org. They protect children. They help educate adults. And they help educate adults so that they don't fuck up children further when things happen and they're victims of abuse, that the people who are supposed to be there to help actually know how to help. Because that when they don't, that actually incurs more trauma oftentimes. So it's a great organization. Find out more there. If you want to give directly, you're like, fuck it on the RSP. You want to go directly. You can go to dl.org. You can go there and do that. And, you know, but I think you'll enjoy the two for being able to help an organization and to be able to get a product that delivers more than what is promised. And I would say that I don't say that lightly. That's been the aim for this all along since 2006.
Sorry, Chris, don't mean to dog you, just having a little
fun. It's okay. He dogged me and it was a fun email. And I agree, sometimes it sucks. It's nice to have a different platform. So we'll look for another one too.
All right, everybody. We'll come back next week and do it again. I'm Bob Harris. He's Matt Waldman. Go check him out, mattwaldman.com, RSP, the rookie scouting portfolio, available now. You will buy it. You'll enjoy it.
Yes, sir. Love you.
Love you. Bye.